Let me put it this way, someone like an entrepreneur like me, from my perspective, so most of my investment goes into my business, right? So that's about 50-60%. And my recommendation to all the, whenever I meet an entrepreneur on the rich list is, you have to allocate at least 10% of your investable asset, cash into startups.
Okay.
That is very much required for nation building. In addition to whatever you're doing, it can also deliver you super stellar returns, right? I would say 10% should be a startup, very idealistically, right? Then possibly based on the other 10-15% on 20% on real estate.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you are new to our channel, please consider subscribing to it and hit the bell icon so that you never miss an update. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and with me today is a very, very accomplished individual, Anas Rehman Junaid. Anas, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Yeah. Anas is the managing director and chief researcher for Hurun India. He was earlier with KPMG. He's an angel investor and an investor in Indian art. So, Anas, let's talk about Hurun India. Tell me about the scope of work you do.
So thanks, Ashutosh, and thanks for the opportunity to speak in a platform. You're doing some great work. So Hurun Report was established about 21 years back by a British chartered accountant called Rupert Hoodsworth. Mm-hmm. So he established in Oxford, but at that time the Chinese economy was just booming, opening up, and he wanted to speak about how the Chinese economy is going to open up. And from that perspective, he created Hurun about in 1999, spoke about the various entrepreneurship things to the rich list and the various lists that we have. So the Indian context is into, I graduated from the University of Oxford in 2011. I met the chairman of Hurun, and I found what he was doing with China quite interesting. And I thought, India, China has been pretty much dominating the global GDP till about 200, 300 years back. And after all these imperialism and so on, has been pretty much a riches to rags story, India, right? And I really believe that this century is going to be dominated by India and China. We would definitely get back that the global share of GDP. And from that perspective is when I started thinking about taking Hurun to India. So invested into the business, took a significant stake for the Indian operations and brought it in 2012.
So for our viewers and listeners, help us understand what is in the report that you produce.
So basically what we do is a compilation. What we try and do is to try and speak about the stories of modern economy through the eyes of entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And how do we come with the entrepreneur list, right? There are many ways to do it. There's subjective lists and so on. But what we focus on do is try and make it as quantifiable and objective as possible through a medium of what we call as a rich list, right? So we have the India rich list, we have the real estate rich list where we speak about the real estate entrepreneurs. We have the women rich list, which we speak about for women entrepreneurs. Then we speak about the responsible side of entrepreneurship through the Hurun philanthropy list. So this year, we're going to speak about sustainable companies through the Impact 50 list, which is basically ranking list of based on the UN SDG goals. Then we're valuing the most valuable 500 companies. We speak about startups, unicorns. So all these lists, which has got some valuation at an enterprise level or an individual level, and donations, again, quantified by actual donations of the philanthropy list. And we also try and promote the artists in India through our art list. Basically, we rank the top 50 artists who are alive in India and show them to the entrepreneurs and encourage them to collect from the Indian artists. So that's what we do. Basically, promoting entrepreneurship, philanthropy, and art through research and list. That's what we do.
Quite incredible. So, say now I have access to your list of the wealthy people of India. How does someone actually be able to use this data?
Multiple ways to look at it, right? I would say if I have to do a mutually exclusive, collectively exhaustive scenario, and I put tangible and intangible, right? tangible is basically anybody who wants to understand where the wealth pockets are, who the new wealth creators are, which are the growing segments, which are the growing sectors, and all that stuff. Anybody who wants to know that. It could be a wealth management firm, which could be a luxury service provider, which could be a service provider, which could be a real estate firm. So anybody who wants to understand the breadth and breadth of wealth distribution in India, quantified to a number, and know who the key individuals are, it will be very interesting for them. And then secondly, for the governments to understand who these top wealth creators are, invite them to their states and all that stuff, it's pretty... the second is the intangible side.
Okay.
Also very, very important economy, right? Basically, the main objective of these lists is to spread the message that the wealth creation is a fantastic thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you create wealth transparently, it deserves a lot of respect and it inspires as well. So from that perspective, I get a lot of messages from people saying, I want to see the full copy of the list. Why is it? It's because I want to feature something in the list. Right, so that is the intangible side. Anybody who wants to get inspired, right? For them, it's really good. It's not really about showing off your wealth and richness and all that stuff. It's mainly to inspire and to wealth creation. So that's the tangible and intangible side.
Very interesting. Yeah. So you also mentioned that you do invest in art.
Yeah.
And I've often asked people that why is it that whenever people in India talk about wealth, it is basically stocks, bonds, etc. When in fact, our wealth is a combination of property, art, jewelry, and money.
Correct.
What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's very correct. Personally, if you look at my portfolio, I'm like a young, small entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
right? So I've got my business. It's my core investment. Then I invest into stock markets. Then I invest into startups, high risk again. Then I invest into real estate, slightly less risk, asset backed. I invest into debt funds.
Mm-hmm.
Then that pretty much covers and in jewelry. I don't invest in jewelry. I think my wife does that. So that's pretty much equalized there. And then art, right? So art is if you choose the right artist and with the proper advisor and so on, art can be one of the best investments to make. And also the best thing about art is it not only is like an investable asset, it can also add a lot of color to your living rooms. So from that perspective, art is it's fantastic asset class to look at. But again, you have to be careful about who the artist. If you should possibly get advice from experienced people and take it forward. So I have good community of people who advise me on what art to pick up and so on. So
interesting. I'm a very great believer in the arts. I mean, I've been collecting arts now, arts of different countries, different artists for over 4 decades.
Wow.
And you're the first person I have met who actually says that art is a good investment. So thank you.
Who's your favorite artist?
Well, I have a very large number of them, from a Yusuf Arakal to an Anjali Lal Menon to a Hussain, to a Ravi Varma. I mean, lots of them when it's gone. To a lot of people from the Bengal school.
Oh, wow.
So many, many art, and including art from Vietnam and Cambodia, China, and so on and so forth. But coming back to our conversation, you just mentioned about art and jewelry and property, etc. Based on all your experience and all the proprietary work investments that you do, what is an ideal mix? And I'm asking you a silly question, but what is the ideal mix of a portfolio?
Let me put it this way. Someone like an entrepreneur like me, from my perspective, so most of my investment goes into my business, right? So that's about 50-60%. And my recommendation to all the, whenever I meet an entrepreneur on the rich list is, you have to allocate at least 10% of your investable asset, cash, into startups.
Okay.
That is very much required for nation building. In addition to whatever you're doing, it can also deliver you super stellar returns, right? Mm-hmm. I would say 10% should be a startup, very idealistically, right? then possibly based on the other 10-15% on 20% on real estate, then 20-25% on others, which include debt and equity and all that stuff.
Anas, when you look at making an investment in a startup, what are some of the things that you look for?
I'm very clear about it. And my questions, my criteria for startups, to first I look at two things, which basically how big is the market, right? What is the size of the opportunity that they are after, right? That's number one. And if the size is big, the next question is there a good team who can go after that size? Are they the right kind of people who can go after the size, right? They may or may not achieve it, but the combination, and I give a lot of weightage to the team, assuming that the opportunity is there and that it's a big opportunity. I don't really get into a lot of things like projections and numbers and break even and all that stuff. I just then look at the founder and look at the founding team good enough, and I back them up. So that's basically my criteria.
And at what stage do you look for an exit?
I'm very much with the founder. So possibly 5 or 6 years, I would take it. I go and pre-seed. So someone like me will get bought out by the time it's third or fourth year by a seed or PE or a VC fund. So that could be my natural exit. Yeah.
Very interesting. And I've often been asked a question, and I thought I'm going to ask you this also, as someone who's an angel investor. Do you prefer to invest in a company where there is a sole founder, or where there is more than one founder?
Great question. So I have invested in both the scenarios. Mm-hmm. So one of the companies I've invested recently is called Aisle. It's a dating app, mm-hmm. right? That is the only company where I've taken an exception in terms of investing into a solo founder. Otherwise, I prefer multiple founders. This company invested because, I mean, the founder is so passionate about changing the dating industry. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen anybody speak so passionately about dating industry and how bad it is right now and how he wants to come and change it. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. So that was the only exception. Rest of all of them, it's multiple co-founders.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Let me just come back to a few more questions on art before I move to the next segment of the conversation. You know, you said that you also support young and upcoming artists, which is not very different from the way you support startups. What do you look for in an artist before you decide to support the individual?
There's a big difference between startups and art economy.
Sure.
I know about at least the company that I'm investing in. I know about what they do, and it's backed with some intuition and logic, right? When it comes to art, it's more or less a little more patriotic, emotional kind of thing, right? Because India is a 5,000 or I don't know, thousands of year old civilization.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that Indian artist is not priced as much on a global scale. No, artists were alive, except for.
Correct.
Again, right? One of the things that Horin does globally is try and promote upcoming artists through our platforms. It's solely from that perspective that I support the young artist. It may or may not be a good investment. It might go bust or whatever, but it doesn't matter. From our perspective, we really want to buy young artists, their work, keep it with us for. The plan is to keep it with us for about 7, 8, 9 years, then auction it, and whatever proceeds we get, we want to invest it back into buying more Indian art. So it's solely with an objective of promoting Indian culture and art. That's about it.
Amazing. And, look at what's happening to art now. There is a lot of activity that's happening in the digital space.
Yeah.
A lot of art is now being sold through the digital space. And auctions are happening, etc. What, in your opinion, will happen to artists as a result of this impetus?
See, I think it's a double-edged sword. The problem with the online auctions is okay, it'll happen. People would trust possibly a credible platform, but beyond that, how trustworthy the platforms are, all that has to be said and done. I think one of the key innovations that should happen in the art world should be through some kind of blockchain system where all the art, the genuinity of art is ascertained, right? So that integration, which cannot be broken, has to come in. Also online sale of artwork. So of course, like any other platform, having an online platform is of course great for the artist because it will increase the overall reach or distribution of their work. But then the fundamental problem is, how do you prevent forgery? How do you ensure that the people who come to buy in a platform really believes that, you know, that it's a genuine piece of art from the artist that they're buying? So the more innovation has to come in. It could be through NFTs or blockchain, or, you know, some tech has to come in to make sure that it looks genuinely placed. Yeah.
Sure. And I guess from an artist's perspective, access to your high net worth individuals must be a very big attraction.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's something that I really want to do and I really want to promote. I want to have articles in my publication just speaking about some of the great works and get them to buy these art, you know. That'll be great.
Very interesting. So Anas, I'm going to move to the next segment of our conversation with some questions for you personally.
Yeah.
What would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Three key milestones. I think three turning points really is that I think firstly, my career with KPMG was quite interesting, not just for the brand and so on, but mainly with the people around who really taught me in terms of how to think in a controlled environment. And with a lot of my mentors are still from my KPMG days. So that's been a great experience for me, KPMG. And second, of course, studying in Oxford was great, not just for the MBA degree, which I don't think is very useful, but at least the network and the kind of people you meet, and, you know, that's been great. And possibly third was, of course, meeting Rupert, who's the founder of Foran, in terms of what his vision is. And I mean, that's been really great. That's really been the reason for me investing in Horan, taking it to India and all that stuff. So that's been
interesting. Very interesting. You know, and my next question is that, you know, you are dealing with such high profile individuals with such sensitive data. What are some of the core values you believe in?
Yeah, I think integrity is the top. So I always tell my team three things. The first thing is, you have to work really hard. Work really smart. Then if you are a good person, right? If you're a good, honest person, things will work in your favor no matter what. So these are the three things that I tell my team and ask them to follow. Mm-hmm. And that's possibly be the reason because behind possibly what I believe is the respect that people have for our list because they integrity. For example, as early as yesterday, I got a request from a real estate service provider saying that, no, they want us to make a report. Mm-hmm. Right? We do co-branded research, but then what they wanted in the report was, they wanted the report to only talk about their company and also the founder of that company. And okay. We don't discuss things, right? Because our is considered of high integrity. So we said, and despite there was money on the table, we said no to it, and we didn't say. And the best part was, you know, what I'm even more proud is, my people, I was not even involved in the discussion. My employees took that call. So the value system that we're trying to build across from top to bottom, that's great. So it's integrity.
My next question to you, Anas, is that for someone who's at your stage in life, I mean, you're very, very young. From where you stand today, what does success mean to Anas?
That's a great question. So I used to think that when I was young, you know, success was like buying a private jet and so on. Mm-hmm. But overall, we evolve beyond, evolve a lot, you know, over a period. So for me, to give you a really honest and possibly it might sound like a very weird answer, mm-hmm. but For me, the thing that matters to me the most is, of course, is that, you know, everybody has a certain capacity of their, you know, capability, which could be brain power or whatever the capability is, right? Now, ideally, I would really want to see be in a position where I am using my skill to the best possible extent. Mm-hmm. If I don't do that, you know, that would be quite disappointing. You know, that is something that I regret on my deathbed. So I really, really want to, I may succeed or fail, but then if I do that, I mean, that'd be great from a business standpoint. And of course, family is equally important. I really hope I continue to be a good father, good son, good husband. If I can be all that, good citizen in the country, I mean, that'd be great.
Fascinating. And a follow-up question to that is that who or what inspires you?
I think my biggest sort of inspiration in my life is my father. He's a doctor, and his commitment to society in terms of what he's doing, I mean, that is great. And I really hope, you know, if I could be like my father. And also, secondly, the entrepreneurs who I meet in my interactions, I mean, that's great. Everybody who I meet, they have, so I always tell people, no, for me, meeting an entrepreneur is like doing a 1 year B school course with them. So that's great. But it's mainly my father who inspires me.
Fantastic. I have time for two more questions for you now. My next question, Anas, is on failure.
Yeah.
I've often said that in our country, parents don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always told, come first, go to the head of the line, et cetera, et cetera. And yet we fail. Yeah. My question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
Quite a few learnings. So I think one of the biggest learnings is about choosing the right partners. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe when you find a partner, it's very important that you be in partnership with somebody who you know since childhood and so on. But that's one of the things that I would do if I were to begin again. But it's been great. You know, the learning has been fantastic in that perspective. Secondly, is about people management, something that, you know, how do you build a team? You know, that's something that you fail and learn, and you fail and learn. It comes along the way. I think those are the some of the learnings that I had. But otherwise, if you ask me, you know, I'm a first time entrepreneur from my family. Mm-hmm. For me, I have to, it's like a, so I always, my B-school course ended in the first year, after which, you know, 8 years has been extended B-school. Mm. So I'm learning everything, trying to learn. So it's been a fantastic experience from that perspective.
Fantastic. And my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to everything that you're saying. What would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on their journey as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, a great question. I think one of the very important thing that I want to tell the individual is, you have to be, integrity is something that you have to have in mind when you think about starting any venture, right? It's always easy to take shortcuts to achieve your short-term goals, but you take an honest path which takes you to the final destination that will sustain and remain. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting saying by Rajnikanth in a movie, which he says, "Kastapadaadhu me kerakkaadhu, kastapadaadhu kerakkaadhu me nerakkaadhu." Means, mm-hmm, if you don't work hard, you won't get anything. But if you get something without working hard, that won't last.
So that's
one principle. And choose the right partners when you start any business. So take your time, don't jump into it.
Very interesting. Anas, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for so much learnings for me, you know, from the world of art, you know, that you talked about. And good luck with Hurun and everything else that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. Thanks a lot. And stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.